Hey everybody, the main room is still muted. We saw you guys get up to do the pledge, but not sure if they can hear us.
I don't think they can. I'll figure it out when they do roll call.
Yeah, I just texted Luis. Hopefully they.
We'll be back to you soon. There we go. Oh, can you hear
We can
us,
hear you now.
Director
We can hear you
Labar?
now. Perfect.
Present.
When you guys say something, just so we can verify.
Director Labar, are you there? Present.
Oh, we don't hear them.
Yeah, we hear you now.
Okay, well, we'll get this settled before we get moving here.
They say they hear us.
But we can't hear them.
They said our room is
Right.
muted, but they can hear us.
Okay. That's the PARS group.
Yes, we're here.
Yeah, they can double check their settings.
I'm t I texted Chris.
They have meetings tomorrow.
Can you guys, let me see if they can hear other people.
We heard them earlier.
Yeah, they heard. Can you call
it?
We could hear my
Try it.
Well, no.
Oh, yeah, we did hear.
They are un they're unmuted.
Is it on our end?
Can you hear us now?
Well, Tanner, you can hear us,
Yeah.
right?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, so it's got to
Yes.
be on their end.
Should we reboot?
Yeah, they heard us at the
Yes.
beginning, and then for some reason we lost their connection.
No, we can hear you, but the other folks and the other
Excuse
folks on
me.
Zoom can hear us,
Yeah.
but you can't hear us on Zoom.
Correct.
So like I can have a conversation with Tanner right now, who's on Zoom. Yeah, so I can have a conversation with Tanner. Everyone else on Zoom hears each other. You're the only ones who don't have audio on us on Zoom.
Roll call so we could.
Oh,
Oh,
Okay.
you want to do it by phone?
Just for
Is that all right to do
Yeah,
that?
let me put you on speaker.
Okay. Director Labar,
Director
are you
Labar,
here?
present.
Thank you. Director Lopez. Thank you. Director Montesino. Absent. Director Sandoval.
Present.
You have quorum, sir.
How do we want to handle the audio? Do we want to?
Taylor, how do you want to handle the audio?
I'm attempting to see if I can get on the line stuff.
Are they just gonna basically have to raise their hand to alert us, I guess, when they want to speak?
With that.
Okay. All right. We'll just move forward doing that then for now until we try to finalize the device.
Okay, Director
Small
Hernandez.
ones. Yeah, can we test any of the others? I don't, did everybody?
I heard from the PARS trio, they can hear us.
Can we hear them?
Yes.
Yes. Test, test.
Can you try speaking,
Yeah.
Mr.
Hello, hello, test, test. Can you hear us?
you repeat yourself, Dr.
Hello? This is Tanner from PARS.
Now we can't hear him.
You should wait. Yeah.
We should wait and do we just reboot your system at some point? it's always the non-IT person that flip the switch.
We have more members.
And for the record, supervisor.
Yes, thank you. Just Serpa? No.
Hello, hello.
Welcome.
You can't hear them.
They're sorting out the audio, so please help yourself to refreshments.
You're gonna leave the call and come back.
You want me to do that?
I it should be playing through me through the.
Oh, thank you, Michael. I was about emailing you.
Backup plan.
I see Wendy's hands raised. Okay.
Test, test, test. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Perfect.
Yes.
Tanner can hear us and the room can hear us. So I think we're good.
Can we hear the room?
Try us out, Luis.
Yep. We're good.
But you got to turn on your microphone or else we can't hear you. Turn on a mic and.
Test. Yep. We can hear you.
Oh, you're loud and clear. Remember to use the microphones. Without it, we can't hear you.
Perfect.
Gracias. All right. Welcome to 2020, everyone.
So we will move on from roll call to public comment. This is for any person that wants to address the committee on items not on the agenda, and presentation should not exceed 3 minutes. Do we have public comment?
No hands raised online, no one here in the room, and nothing received at the office.
All right, thank you very much. That would take us to reports by committees, committee chairs on committee meetings, budget, personnel, and nominating committee. Was canceled today, so we did not have a report on that meeting. And then, does anybody want to address it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. The advisory committee did not meet for lack of a quorum, which is just another way of saying to you that we need our representatives be named to that committee, so we have more than a handful to draw upon.
Great, appreciate that. That would take us to comments and referrals from chair and board members. Any comments or referrals?
Mr. Chair, can you use them? I don't know if you have a microphone for you. It's really hard to hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah,
perfect. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. So that would take us to item six, comments and referrals from chair and board members. Do we have any comments or referrals from the board members? Hearing none, that would take us to our consent agenda. This consists of items routine and non-controversial with one motion unless items are pulled from the agenda. Do any directors want to pull any of the consent agendas items from the agenda? Hearing none, do we have any public comment on consent?
Mm.
Real quick, we sure we don't have public comment?
Who was the second? And no public comments received at the office and no one here in the boardroom.
All right, okay. We have a first and we have a second. Roll call vote, please.
Hey, Director Alejo,
aye.
Director Eskew, Director DeSerpa, Vice Chair Hernandez,
aye.
Chair Kuzmicki,
yes.
Director Labar,
aye.
Director Lopez,
aye.
Director Sandoval, approve unanimously.
Great, that would take us to our regular agenda. So we'll start with item 13, receive annual report by Public Agency Retirement System on MBARD's other post-employment benefits, OPEB, and pension rate stabilization trust accounts. We have Rosa Rosales.
Good afternoon, members of the board. Today we've invited PARS to do a presentation on our OPEB and pension trust accounts.
Rosa, it's really hard to hear you again. Sorry, microphones.
Better?
Perfect.
Much better.
Okay. So I did attach the reports from the quarter ended June 30th, 2025. And I'll go ahead and introduce Tanner Love and his team from the PARS to do their presentation.
Perfect. Hi, board. Thank you for having us today. I guess I'll share my screen unless you guys wanted to pull up the presentation, but I can share on right now. Can you guys see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So today on the call, we have myself, Tanner, and Ashley as well from PARS. And then on the PFM asset management side, we have Dennis Mullins. He'll be going over the investments later on in the presentation. On the PARS side, always feel free to reach out to myself or Ashley if you ever have any requests or any questions. And then just a high-level overview on PARS. This is a very collaborative effort. So the top portion is PARS, where Ashley and I represent and work. We are the trust administrators and the consultant of the trust. So we'll serve as the record keepers, consultant, and the central point of contact, as well as monitor all plan compliance and really process all the contributions and disbursements. PARS, as you probably know, has been around for 41 years, and we do handle over $9 billion of assets under administration. And then if you go down to the red box, the trustee is U.S. Bank. They are the ones safeguarding the plan assets. And then if we go over to the investment manager, that's PFM Asset Management, and that's who Dennis Mullins represents, who you guys are going to be talking to in detail in a little bit. And then here is the Section 115 trust. Currently, the district is utilizing both sides of the trust. So you have pre-funded OPEB so far up to $1.67 million, and this is governed by Gatsby 75 for your retiree medical benefits. And then on the other side, the district has pre-funded the pension up to $1 million, and that's for all pension-related benefits as well. The good thing about the 115 trust, it allows for sub-accounts, financial stability, and flexible investing, and much more. And now we're really going to dive into the details of the district's plan. And this is for the OPEB side. This plan started back of May of 15th of 2013. The plan administrator is the Air Pollution Control Officer. And currently the district's in the balanced investment strategy. And then if we look at the bottom half of the page, we're going to get into the account details as of June 30th, 2025. The initial contribution was made in October of 2013 of $150,000. An additional contribution was made of $845,000, bringing your total contributions to $995,000. The district has not taken any disbursements out as of yet, bringing your account balance just north of $1.6 million. And then the next slide, we're really going to dive into a high-level overview and illustration of the history of the contributions, disbursements, and total assets as of that June 30th date. So you can see all the contributions made pretty consistently from 2014 to June 2025. And then you, there once again, there's been no disbursements, but you can see those total assets, the evolution of those to that north of $1.6 million mark. And then we're gonna dive into the actuarial evaluation. This was dated June 30th of 2025 with a measurement date of June 30th, 2024. So we're gonna dive into the numbers here. The demographic study, including the number of active plan members is 30. And then number of inactive plan members currently receiving benefits is 15. And then the number of inactive plan members entitled to but not receiving benefits is 22, bringing your total to 67. And this dives in just a little bit deeper. The same measurement date of June 30th of 2024, you have a healthy discount rate of 6%. And then your total OPEB liability is just north of $1.6 million with a fiduciary net position just north of 1.4, bringing you to a net OPEB liability just above $200,000 and then a funded ratio of 87.8%. But if you look at the asterisks below, we have updated those to the June 30th numbers at, of your asset levels, bringing you to a funded ratio of just 99.9%. And then the service cost plus interest for fiscal year 2024-2025 is just north of $140,000 with benefit payments just north of $68,000. Any questions here?
Any questions from directors?
Okay. Perfect. And then the next slide
Apologize. We do have a question.
A question. Can you go to the slide previous?
Which, this one?
A previous slide.
Oh, yeah.
The number of inactive plan members entitled to but not receiving benefits are 22. Are those people who have retired that aren't pulling?
That is correct. Yes.
Number of inactive plan members? Those are people that are like separated from the agency, or what does that mean, inactive plan members?
Inactive, those are just, yeah, people have separated from the district.
Yeah, and this language was directly pulled from your actuarial evaluation report. So it depends on how McLeod Watts defines these. But this is the language pulled directly from that report. So if there are specific questions about what inactives are, it would be the actuaries that would have a better answer to that.
Okay, it's curious because if you add 15 and 22 and suddenly everybody starts pulling their retirement, 1.6 million doesn't go very far.
Which is why we have an actuarial that does a statement every year. We're looking at liability. So we have been playing catch up with this. We were overfunded for a while. And so it just depends on who retires and the number game. I will say that we've gone through many years here where we had very little retirement, and now we're hitting that wave. So we're seeing that happen now.
We'll be able to afford that as everybody.
Yeah, we're. Out, yes.
Including yourself.
I don't know if you can afford me, but the idea is that we're pre-funding it. So in addition to PERS, we should have this as a pretty good system to back up. That was the intent all along. And if we need the money, we can get to it too.
Thank you. Any further questions? Hearing none, we'll move on.
Perfect. And now these are your total returns for your OPEB plan as of that June 30th date. So you can see the illustration there, and then you can see the bar graph on the right-hand side as well, going back to that 2014 all the way to June 2025. So you see the evolution of those returns, which Dennis will touch on a little bit later on in the presentation. So currently at June 2025, you're looking at returns of 10.68% with an exception to date annualized percentage of 6.89%. Then we're gonna switch gears a little bit, the pension side. And then we're gonna talk about the summary of the pension side as well right here. So this section of the trust started in March 21st of 2018. The plan administrator is still the air pollution control officer, but the investment strategy did switch to the moderately conservative strategy. And now we're going to talk about the account details on the bottom portion as of that June 30th date as well. So initial contribution was made back in June 2020 of $500,000. An additional contribution was made of $375,000, bringing your total contributions to $875,000. Just like OPEB, there has been no disbursements made. And then the total account balance is just north of $1 million. Now we're going to go to the next one. This is an illustration of your contributions, disbursements, and your total assets as of that June 30th date. So you can see back in 2020, you made that contribution of $500,000. Then 22, you made the $75,000, the 24, $150,000. And then 2025, you made $150,000. So you can see all the contributions there, the disbursement category, and then the evolution of those total assets just north of $1 million. And then here, I know this is a little outdated, but this is the pension funding status slide from CalPERS. The 2024 number should be coming out any day now, but we just wanted to give you what we had access to. So this is a comparison from 2022 to 2023, and the actuarial liability was $38.3 million, assets $26.2 million, with an unfunded liability of $12.1 million, and a funded ratio of 68.5%. And then the employer contribution amount at $1.2 million. But if you go down to the next category or the next line, this is projected to go up 44.1% in fiscal year 2030 and 31 to $1.7 million. And then your total plan returns for the pension side, you can see from 2020 to 2025. The evolution of those returns. And then for June 2025, you're sitting at 8.68% with an exception to date, an analyzed percentage of 4.16%. Are there any questions? I know I'm going a little bit quick, but is there any questions as of right now before I pass it off to Dennis to get into more details of your investments?
No questions. You can move on.
Okay.
Thank you, Tanner. As Tanner said, well, first of all, I'm Dennis Mullins. I'm your investment portfolio manager with PFM Asset Management. PFM is the institutional asset management arm of U.S. Bank. The two portfolios that you have are different. The OPEB is the balance strategy that we're showing you right now. It's roughly 60-40, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. By comparison, the pension pre-funding account is about 30-70, 30% stocks, 70% bonds. That makes sense. There's a couple of reasons it makes sense. Your OPEB is a very long-term investment plan. We look at OPEBs in terms of 20, 30, 40 years it's going to be there. It's going to take a long time for this entire process to play out. You're pretty much fully funded, as we can see right now. And you're about 60-40, and that makes sense because your discount rate is 6%. And if you look at that funding page that Tanner showed you, if you're 100% funded, you've got to continue growing that portfolio at 6% a year, your discount rate, to continue to be fully funded. So it makes sense to have a portfolio that has averaged about 6% a year. Your historic rate of return on this OPEB assets are 6.89% since you joined. The portfolio is shown on this page and the following page. You can see there's a lot of information on here, but I'll go through it really quick. You've got the asset allocation in the first column, and this only shows you the stocks. The other growth and the bonds and the cash are on the following page. You can see the returns for various periods ending June 30. I have pretty good news that if you look at the one-year column, 10.69% total rate of return over the year just ended. For the 3 years, you're at 11% a year. So that's 33%+ return over the last 3 years. The last 5 and 7 years have also been pretty good. In the last 10 years or so, U.S. stocks have performed very well. and really allowed most of these multi-asset portfolios to perform pretty well. One very interesting thing that happened just recently, if you look at the year-to-date column, you can pick out a couple of numbers in there, but the international equities did much better than the U.S. equities. That's very unusual. We have not seen that happen for the last 10 years or more. But if you look at that dark blue line that says international equity in the year-to-date column, 17.85. Domestic equity in that dark blue line in the year-to-date column, 5.78. So non-U.S. stocks for the first time in over 10 years came alive and did very well. So it pays to diversify once again after 10 years or so of not really paying to diversify. Tanner, let's go ahead to the next page. I want to show the other half of the portfolio. So other growth is real estate and global infrastructure. And then fixed income is bonds. Quick note about the fixed income. If you look in the year-to-date column, 4.1% on bonds that are yielding about 4%. The way that 4% bonds give you 4% in 6 or 7 months is by interest rates coming down a little bit. The income flow over that period was only 2%. So we got a little price appreciation because interest rates fell a little bit in the intermediate part of the yield curve, 4 to 7 years. We hear a lot about the Fed. Will they cut rates? Will they not cut rates? That doesn't have a direct impact on our fixed income. What matters to us is what the bond market does with interest rates in that 4 to 7 year space. So that's been working well for us. For 1 year, these bonds are up 6.43%. And again, they're yielding 4. So that means we've gotten some capital appreciation. Now, quick note about the future. Stocks have done very well over the last 10 years, up about 13 to 14% a year. We believe that stocks are going to return less going forward over the next 5 or 10 years, more like 7% a year. So stock returns have been really strong over the last decade, even over the last few years, but we think they're going to come down a little bit over the next decade, more like 7%. Bond returns have been really anemic over the last 5 years. If you look at that fixed income and the five-year column, you'll see 0.46% a year. Bond returns have been just barely above zero for the last 5 years. The good news is going forward, we think bond returns are going to be higher, more like 4% a year. So stock returns about 7% a year, bond returns about 4% a year. Overall portfolio returns, maybe a little less than what we've seen. You've seen compound growth rates of 6.89, just under 7%, maybe closer to 6 going forward. Stock returns are still expected to be higher than bond returns, so the asset allocation decision still makes sense. Going through this really quickly to try to keep you on schedule. Any questions about the portfolio, the performance, the asset allocation, anything I've gone over so far?
We have no questions.
Okay. Tanner, can you page forward to the next page, 3.1, which is the next section for the PRSP? There you go. This is your other portfolio. This is your pension rate pre-funding account. It is much more conservative. The OPEB 60-40, this one's more like 30-70. You can see the one-year return here, 8.65. The one-year return for the OPEB was 10.69. So lower returns historically. We're going to get lower returns in the future, but less volatility. The reason for that is it's mostly bonds. Again, I mentioned the good news is we expect bonds to do better going forward. So this ought to really bring the returns of these two portfolios closer together, as returns should be flatter going forward. More conservative portfolios with a higher bond exposure will probably do better, but they're not going to do better than the portfolios with stocks. So pretty flat returns going forward. Between different portfolios of different risk is what I mean by that. So it's a good year for both portfolios. The economy, the markets are doing very well in 2025. Despite what you may be hearing, we've not seen a deterioration in really any of the economic data so far this year. We are seeing some very gradual weakening in the growth rates of some of the economic trends, but nothing has fallen apart yet. So it looks like should be another solid year. And that's an abbreviated investment overview. Always probably a little more possible when returns are good. But if you have any questions, let me know. Otherwise, I'll turn it back over to Tanner.
Hearing none, we'll turn it back to Tanner.
Perfect. And then that's pretty much all we had for you today. If you guys had any more generic questions for PARS, please let us know. Besides that, thank you for having us.
Any more questions? Hearing none, public comment. Oh, Wendy?
Not a question. Just wanted to say thank you for the detailed presentation. And to Richard, and I guess to previous boards of the Air District, a thank you for establishing the 115 Trust and making some having the foresight to begin investing in the prepayment of these obligations, so that we and future boards who find themselves sitting on the Air Resources District are better prepared for the obligations of future retirements when they start hitting the books and the budget. I just wanted to acknowledge that I think that was the right decision that those that came before us made, and the district will be better prepared. Is better prepared because of the foresight that those that made those decisions did make. I'm happy to be able to continue making these investments so that we are financially prepared for the future. And I think that every district would be, every special district would be wise to have budget advisors with this type of recommendation. So thank you. Thank you, Richard. And thank you to those who have come before us.
Rich Stedman.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I will just say that one of the reasons we have this discussion right now is because of the past choices made by previous boards. So it's in your wheelhouse now. After hearing this, and we could continue this item and have additional discussions, but the board was pretty much set on the initial balanced approach for our OPEB, and that's paid off really well. I can't read the future. We have to rely on the advice of our advisors and so forth, and we look to our actuaries. The other thing is that they made a decision for the retirement trust to go with the conservative or moderately conservative, which we know that the discount rate was going to be a lot lower. You guys can change that. You could flip-flop them. You could say you want to see put everything, let it ride, or you could just say hands off, and it's been doing pretty well, which I think it has. So I just want you to know that if there's something, this was contentious among the board previously, and they went with the conservative for the second fund. So you have the opportunity to say, hey, let's move it into a more potentially lucrative strategy or not. So I just throw that out there, but I think this is a good place to get a summation of where we're at, and we're looking pretty good. So, and we also, as far as contributions, I just wanted to say one year you saw there wasn't any, it actually got doubled up in the following year because of the way it hit our books. We do listen to our actuary when we have our report to see what the recommended contribution is. We're actually this year in the budget, we went well beyond that. So we just want to make this thing's funded. It is a liability on our books, right? So when we come to bargaining, we talk about this because this is what we're going to owe. And so we do have a nice fund balance that could take care of this partly. So, we can certainly put more money as we see fit, but I like to rely on the actuary to do that recommendation. So thank you.
Further questions, comments? Hearing none, we have public comment.
No hands raised online and no one here in the boardroom.
Nothing received.
This is a presentation item unless board members want to give further direction, but it seems like status quo seems like the advice from the advisors and seems like a smart approach, unless we're hearing otherwise. All right, that would finish up that item, and that would take us on to our next regular item. Sorry, let me pull this up, which is item 14, receive presentation from David Edwards on the Office of Environmental Health Hazards, CalHART score, California Communities Extreme Heat Scoring System. All right, David.
Let me give David, if I may, give an introduction.
Absolutely.
David Edwards, PhD, is the Chief Deputy at the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. He has held that position since September 2021. In this role, he oversees day-to-day administrative and programmatic operations at OEHA. Prior to joining OEHA, Dr. Edwards worked for 13 years at CARB, the California Air Resources Board, where he held various leadership positions, most recently as Assistant Division Chief for the Air Quality Planning and Science Division. And I would add that David has always been a great friend to the districts. So we really appreciate it. No matter where he lands, we know that he's got our back. And then lastly, just to let you know, Dr. Edwards received his PhD in chemistry from Princeton and his BS in chemistry from St. Mary's College in California.
Great. Thank you, Rich. And thank you for the invitation. It's always good to come and talk to different groups about our new tool. So just a little bit before I go into the presentation about OEHA, we're part of CalEPA. We're one of the six boards, departments, and offices. We're the office part of CalEPA. We are a lot smaller than our sister agencies. We have about 150 people, mostly toxicologists, epidemiologists, and we develop the science to support many of the air quality standards, particularly in the Air Toxics Hotspots program that the air districts use. We also do health protective water quality standards. We do fish advisories across the state for rivers, lakes, and streams. And then we also implement Proposition 65, which many of you have seen the signs. We don't enforce that part, but we do implement that by developing different scientific aspects of that. So just a general overview of OEHA. We also developed and managed CalEnviroScreen, which some of you may have heard of. And today what I'm here to talk about is one of our newer tools, CalHeatScore, which just came out earlier this year in January. All right, so a little bit of background. The CalHeatScore, it came out of a bill that was passed in 2022, AB 2238. And basically what it was asking us to do was to develop an extreme heat ranking system to help communities and others understand the impacts of extreme heat across California. The reason that this is important, sort of setting the stage, is that heat is the number one climate impact killer in California. There's due to partly different types of heat stroke, nausea, and also just not identifying it over time, given that it's one of the sort of, it's not an obvious sort of, there's not a wildfire, there's not smoke, it's just hot. So this tool is really designed to get awareness out there for heat and to really understand the impacts that it has on different parts of the state, because we have a lot of different microclimates. So what we have within CalHeatScore, and I'll do a demo of the tool, I think, after this slide, and then get back into some of the other slides. What we have is at a zip code level, a localized alert of a heat ranking between 0 and 4, 0 being no heat ranking, 4 being an extreme heat day. Not only do we have daily projections for what's going to happen, but we do forecast 7 days out. And the unique part of this, it's not just based on a weather component, it also has a public health component, where we're looking at emergency room visits associated with heat-related illnesses at the zip code level as well, and combining those two together to come up with a public health recommendation to support our different values. We've been doing, since January, a lot of different outreach across the state. And so I'm excited to be able to talk to you all about this tool as well. We also have been able to put in some resources, such as links to cooling centers across the state, as well as some demographics that could help local folks and others be able to sort of plan ahead, particularly in that forecasting space. All right, we're gonna do a demo. All right, so what you see on the screen now is we have, I zoomed into to Monterey area. You can sort of see the sort of today's Cal Heat Score forecast. And you can see that the general is that light orange color, which is a one. If there was a zero, it would be a gray. Moving on out, I know it's gonna get a little bit hotter across the state this weekend. And particularly inland, you could see that tomorrow is going to be a bit more warm. And then Friday, oops, I hope my battery lasts. Friday, it'll be a little bit cooler. And then Saturday, I think it gets back to a little bit more of a regular weather pattern, but still inland is still pretty warm. The nice thing is if you're able to click, let's say we want to click on that zip code over here where there's a pretty warm day. There we go. It gets outlined. So what it does, you could click on these three little bars at the bottom, and first part, it does sort of give a highlight of what a Cal Heat score 4 means. So this would be affecting anyone without effective cooling or adequate hydration. Going down from 3 is sort of less populations are impacted by the heat. It also has sort of the record highs and average temperatures for that day in that given zip code. So you could see it looks like it's going to be 102, which is potentially 2 degrees above the record high. You could also then click on the second tab to get a sense of the age profile. So if there's a lot of seniors or something in the area, that would be something to think about from a warning perspective. You can see here that the general amount of the population is 18 to 64 years old. It gives a race ethnicity profile as well. And then when you click on the second tab, it gets into different health insurance profiles. So how many folks have health insurance versus don't have health insurance in that zip code, outdoor worker profiles, as well as linguistic isolation. So it gives a good sense. You can get a sense by clicking on that zip code information if you have a high heat score day, plus some interesting other facts to kind of think about how warnings might need to take place. So kind of looking at how Cal Heat Score has been responding in the Monterey Bay region, on the right kind of shows an August 1st through August 15th, just time lapse. So you can kind of get a sense of how the temperatures have been in the last couple weeks. And then the graph on the left is showing the percents of zip codes and the types of Cal heat scores that we've had since the tool's been online since January. And you can see that there was that sort of really dark red blip at the end of March. I don't know if you remember, that was when like San Francisco hit 80 degrees. I believe you guys also around here hit 80. It was about 8 degrees above the record high. And that's where some of those spikes came in, even though it was still sort of early spring, winter. So as mentioned, what we look at to generate these scores, we're looking at climate and weather data. So we're looking at the historical climate observations, so like what the high temperatures have been historically, what the averages are at the zip code level, and then combining that with the weather forecasts, and that leads to a basis for the different heat rankings. We then combine that with heat health response data. So looking at emergency department visits that are heat related, such as heat illness, heat stroke, dehydration, or acute or chronic kidney failure. And we get this from the Department of Healthcare Access and Information. It's another state agency. So when we combine these two types of data together, we're able to sort of establish a baseline health risk, which is what generates that zero score. And then when there's an increase or uptick in the emergency room visits, we kind of have our thresholds at a third, two-thirds, and above 100% risk that gets to our, our 1, 2, and 3 scores. I think I'm done, but that was my last slide. So if you are interested, I think I shared my slides with Rich. There's a link to the tool, and happy to take any questions that you might have.
Microphone.
What can you say what the tool is called again?
It's called Cal Heat Score.
Thank you.
And the webpage is calheatscore.calepa.ca.gov.
Where are you pulling all the data about whether they have insurance or not? Where is all that data coming from?
So part of that, it comes from our the HCI, the health data sets that we have, and then the rest of it is from the census.
Lopez, Supervisor Lopez.
Yeah, thank you. Taylor, what's the end product here? Like, so you have these heat scores, great that the public can go reference them, that we as policymakers can utilize them, but what do you hope the efficacy is and what does that look like in the big picture 5-10 years from now? Is it to have a data set that can be referenced, or do you see this somehow becoming a place that public goes to check daily based on historical trends, what they can expect? I'm trying to understand what the utility is long-term for our communities.
Yeah. So long-term, what I'm sort of hoping for, we are in the process of developing a mobile application or an API, which could hopefully people be able to download, get alerts on their phone, be able to get information like where the nearest cooling center is and so forth. I think the sort of secondary part that I'd like to sort of see it is when you have your local news station and you have your 5-day weather forecast, that right underneath what the range of temperatures is, you'd have your Cal heat score. So people can understand what those temperature ranges mean from a health perspective on heat for that 5 days.
Thank you.
Supervisor Alejo?
Just to follow up on its potential use in the future, obviously with temperature rising and worker safety standards, Cal OSHA, it seems that it would be a good tool to provide warnings to employers and to work crews when they're working out there. Obviously, heat illness and even deaths out in agricultural fields is still a big concern. So, was that part of the legislative intent to also look at potentially using this tool to save lives and protect workers out in our agriculture?
Yeah, yes, all of the above. I think we're still pretty early on in our outreach. We had a fairly big press release launch in late May. The governor gave a Weather Channel interview, and there was some, we had a press release that went out. And ever since late May, we have been much more actively engaging with different groups across the state. The office of, used to be OPR, LCI, it's the Governor's Office of Research and Planning. There's also a part of the bill that had them also do a, have an extensive outreach program. So we've been working with groups like AARP to kind of how to engage with older populations. And workers are definitely on our list. I don't know if we've gotten there yet. And then there was also the Department of Insurance was involved in this bill a lot. And so they've written a report and are working with us on how these heat impacts would impact insurance as well.
Further questions, comments? Supervisor Askew?
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to come in. Well, thank you for the work on this, and then thank you for the time to present. I just like looked up and I see there's lots of information sort of being pushed out publicly. And you know, I feel so lucky that we get to live where we live.
Supervisor, I'm sorry, are you using a microphone? It's really hard to hear you.
Is that not working?
No.
Just speak louder. Is that louder?
Yeah, that helped. Perfect. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, real close there. Okay, I was going to say, thank you for the presentation and thank you for all the work that the department is doing to push the information out to make it available more broadly. I was just commenting that I feel so lucky to live where we live when you were pulling the map up and showing that there were all these, you know, bright red zones and then around the bay where the air district broadly covers, we were in this sort of lighter colored area. So many of our homes don't have or need air conditioning. And just from an energy usage perspective, the one of the applications that I would hope and see potentially in the future is as we think about issues of environmental justice and where climate refugees find themselves migrating to these zones where it is easier to live and easier to exist, where you're not relying on expensive heating and cooling in the hotter and cooler parts of the year. There aren't a lot of areas in the country like that. And this is one of those because we have the bay right here that helps regulate our temperature. But I think there are implications for that for our region, and there are energy and air quality impacts indirectly related to that reality, which are relevant to the body that we sit on here. So I just wanted to comment on those implications and utilizations, maybe not directly, but indirectly relevant to the work that you're doing, and say thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And I guess also just the kind of one of the research applications that would be interesting is once we get more than a couple years of data, we can actually sort of see at the zip code level, particularly like here, or we also got a lot like in the south of here near Santa Barbara and so forth. In the wintertime, there was a lot of sort of record highs that we've been sort of seeing, and we can see how that trend goes over time. So that I think that could also help with planning as well in some ways with if there's more winter highs as opposed to historical. So.
Then Rich Steadman?
Yes, I just want to put a, I've got this. Can you hear me, Chris?
You come in loud and clear, Rich.
Yeah, I think these mics are a little bit better, so maybe we'll get more of these. I don't know. We're still figuring out. I apologize for the technical stuff. You guys are probably ready to shoot me, but I just wanted to say that, you know, what does this have to do with air quality? And there's a couple of points. Number one, we know that the temperatures are going to be increasing. That map is going to go red. Okay, so that's a big problem, and that's the result of climate change and air pollution in general. And we see that the higher the heat we have, the more chance for wildfires and smoke emissions. So that's going to be a big deal, especially when it's hot and you're sheltering in place and you have to close your windows and you because of smoke and you can't get a fan going. So that's this is going to dovetail nicely into our air quality advisories. And then the other thing too, as Wendy said, is that the higher temperatures have, the greater chance of photoconversion of nitrogen oxides into ozone, which is smog. Basically, the hotter it gets, Smog is a summertime phenomenon, so we expect to see more air pollution during the summer months, even though we may not have the same or fewer emissions. So this is a big deal, and I'm really grateful to Dave for coming out. This is really cutting edge stuff. And I just wanted to say Dave's awesome at OEHA, and you guys have all heard of CalEnviroScreen, but they've done a lot of other tools, health risk assessment tools and so forth. And they've really been helping us out in the air districts throughout the state come to terms with it. And these guys are world leaders in toxicology. They sort of eclipse EPA in their capacity to understand and explain the toxicological nature of things. So we're really blessed to have Dave, and I wanted to thank Dave for coming out. And if you have any questions, just let me know, and I can talk to Dave as well and get those answers. So thanks.
Thanks, Rich.
Anything further? Thank you so much. Great information. Do we have public comment?
No hands raised online, no one here, and nothing received at the office.
All right, that would take us to item 15, which is presentation and proposed updates to the MBARD CARB grant program policies and procedures.
Good afternoon, Chairman Kosnicki and distinguished members of the board. My name is Tyrone Bell. I'm an air quality planner here at the Monterey Bay Air Resources District. And I'm joined by.
I'm Irene Miranda, also an air quality planner. Hello.
Next slide, please. So MBARD regularly updates the CARB grant programs policies and procedures manual to clarify and maintain consistency with CARB's program guidelines. This manual sets out our local procedures for implementing specific programs which provide grant funding for cleaner than required engines and equipment, as well as reducing other sources of pollution. So first we'll briefly describe each program and then go into the proposed updates.
As Ty mentioned, there are three programs that we implement through CARB. Those are the three. The first one I'm going to talk about is the Carl Moyer program, Carl Moyer. And this program reduces smog-forming emissions, which we're very aware of, such as nitrogen oxides, reactive organic gases, and particulate matter. This program also reduces carbon dioxide and toxic contaminants. The way it works is that it incentivizes the replacement of older engines and equipment with newer, cleaner equipment capable of doing the same work. At MBARD, we prioritize projects based on cost effectiveness, among other criteria. So far, the total funds from the Carl Moyer program allocated to MBARD are over $20.5 million. And the total emissions reduced for all the projects is over 806 tons. Next slide. So here's an example of a project typed within Carl Moyer. We call it LEAP. It stands for Landscape Equipment Exchange Program. And this replaces gasoline-powered small off-road engines such as chainsaws, walk-behind mowers, and leaf blowers. So this works with both residents and local businesses. And there, on the slide there, there's an example of the funding allocations over the past 2 years. Next slide. This is one particular project we finished recently from LEAP. Landscape and garden equipment. On the left, you'll see 10 gasoline-powered leaf blowers. And on the right, once the old ones were turned in and destroyed, we replaced those with 10 new zero-emission leaf blowers. And those, each leaf blower has alongside of it four extra battery packs. This one project is saving 255 pounds of smog-forming emissions per year. Next. The second fund that MBARD helps implement is called FARMER, Funding Agricultural Replacement Measures for Emissions Reductions. It's similar to Carl Moyer, but it emphasizes agricultural projects. So again, it provides financial incentives to replace older agricultural engines with newer, cleaner engines. Examples of that kind of equipment would be tractors, harvesters, heavy-duty trucks, and water pumps. Total funds allocated so far are over $5.2 million, and the emissions reductions we've realized are over 162 tons. Here's a recent example. This was for a farmer in Hollister, and on the left is the old equipment. This is a 400 horsepower, which is a high horsepower engine from 1982. Tier zero means it was uncontrolled. Emissions were uncontrolled at the time. And we replaced it with a new 375 horsepower Fendt. And the emission savings from this one project are 18.4 tons per year. And that continues. I spoke to the grantee myself, and he said that for a high horsepower tractor like this, his farm could not afford it without the grant because the cost was over $470,000 and his grant was $150,000. So we have some grateful farmers.
So the Community Air Protection Program, or CAP, was established to address disproportionate impacts of air pollution in priority populations by focusing on cleaner technologies and engaging the community. These priority populations are identified based on environmental, health, and socioeconomic information. To date, CARB has allocated over $3.5 million of CAP funding to MBARD, and this funding allocation has been stable over the last few years. And the total emissions reduced to date is also 50 tons. So Cal EPA and the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment and CARB, coincidentally, they're here, co-developed Cal EnviroScreen to identify these low-income and disadvantaged communities. And if you look on this map, you will see the pink shaded areas. That's the designated disadvantaged communities within the Monterey Bay Air Resources District's jurisdiction. The blue areas on the map are our low-income communities. And the yellow areas is a half-mile buffer between the two communities. And again, these communities are identified based on geographic, socioeconomic, public health, and environmental hazard criteria. This is an example of a project we completed recently. This was for the Monterey County Office of Education. We replaced one of their diesel-powered school buses, this 1993 Thomas Safety Liner, with a brand new zero emission and electric school bus. They were able to receive $390,470 to purchase this new bus. And this project is saving 212 pounds of smog forming emissions every year.
Okay, let's get to the updates. This is CARB's first major update to their guidelines that we must follow since 2017. So that triggered a major update within our policies and procedures. So this is what we're summarizing for you now. One thing that's new is including a policy on the use of generative artificial intelligence. Gen AI is defined as an artificial intelligence system that creates text, images, and videos based on its training data. Generally, MBARD will follow CARB's guidelines, of course, and specifically, we are not going to use Gen AI to create images or contracts. Under the CARB Moyer program, there are a number of updates. As I said, it's a major one, but let me just highlight a few things. For example, for electric vehicle charging station projects and marine repower projects, there will be more costs that are eligible for incentivizing, and there will also be more flexibility in project timelines. This is important. For example, it often takes PG&E 2 years or more to power up an electric vehicle charging station. So the flexible timelines are very important. Within the LEAP program, lawn and garden equipment, public school projects will also have greater flexibility. There will no longer be limits on the quantity of equipment exchanged, and there will be no cap on the maximum incentive amounts for public schools.
For farmer, there are two major proposed guideline updates, and they're to do with new eligible project categories. So the first, I'll just mention real quick, is zero emission drone projects. We're pretty excited about this one. We already have an application in process. It is replacing a spray tractor with a drone that would be doing the same work at zero emission. Secondly, we are proposing to introduce a new utility terrain vehicle program. You'll notice under farmer, it does say agricultural, whereas under Carl Moyer program, we have a non-agricultural UTV program also proposed. MBARD's concentration, our intent is to focus on agricultural UTV replacement projects, but we will also want to include the non-agricultural component to allow some flexibility in the future should we decide to go with that route as well. I mean, again, these are replacement projects that would replace small tractors with, so again, UTVs are, they're, if you don't know what they are, they're like these four-wheel off-road vehicles, like gators. You might see them on vineyards most often around here. And then also under the Community Air Protection Program, most of these proposed updates have to do with, again, new eligible categories for potential projects. I won't go into details on all of those listed here, but I will highlight a few. Community greening and vegetative barriers, what that has to do with is mitigating dust mostly. So that could involve planting large trees or shrubs between farm fields and residential areas to create a wind buffer, so that dust doesn't migrate into those residential areas. Sensitive receptors, those are particular segments of our population that are more susceptible to air pollution, such as young children or older members of our community, as well as folks who might have health concerns, such as people who might be suffering from asthma. So we want to go ahead and protect those and look at projects that can help mitigate air pollution that might affect them in particular. Additionally, we are looking at projects involving stationary generators, as well as paving sidewalks and bike paths. And that, again, has to do with dust mitigation. Under the wood smoke reduction program, we're proposing changing our low income evaluation standard to following the LIHEAP standard. LIHEAP is a low income heating assistance program. So we're hoping to partner with a local agency that would evaluate our applicants based on that criteria. That concludes our presentation. If you have any questions, we're happy to answer it.
All right, thank you. We'll go to public comment first and we'll bring it back.
No hands raised online, no one here in the boardroom, and nothing received at the office.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions or comments on this? Yes, Supervisor Askew?
Thank you. So outreach to let folks know about that will become eligible given the changes to the program, specifically the school districts with the who will become eligible to apply. How do we let them know?
For outreach, we do a lot of advertising on both English and Spanish speaking radio, as well as local publications. I don't have a full list of all the radio stations or media outlets. And we also regularly go out and engage in the community at various community events and any opportunities that might arise to spread that word.
If I may, we're also obligated under some of the grant conditions to actually go out and have community meetings. So we would advertise the location and have a town hall style presentation to let people know about the changes.
Thank you. Further questions, okay. Comments? Go ahead.
Sorry if I missed this, but is this a rolling grant or is there a fixed deadline for people to apply? Is it until all the money's used up or?
So, because I would like to present this, for example, to my Farm Bureau, because I make presentations to them every month.
Yes, ma'am. So they vary depending on the program. So the Carl Moyer program and Farmer, we actually group that into what we call the Diesel Engine Equipment Replacement Program, or DEERP. And that so far has been a competitive process. So we have an application period that does close, and then that allows us to evaluate and rank each application to by cost effectiveness. And then, so that is a closed period. I believe this past year, we implemented CAP as a rolling program where people, folks could apply as they needed to or wanted to.
If I may again, yeah, go ahead. That's a really good question. And this year, the governor's budget zeroed out Farmer. Okay, so these are subject to the whims and ideas of the governor. So we did have a pretty huge contingent that was upset by this, primarily in the Central Valley, and they lobbied really hard to get the funding restored. But most of the money where this comes from is going to be going to CAL FIRE this year. It's in the billions of dollars to do forest and agricultural prescriptive burning.
Richard, you know, it'd be very helpful is if there are programs that you want us to blast out to our constituent groups, if those could come to us somehow, that we could just cut and paste the paragraph and the link directly into our newsletters and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'll commit to that. In our professional association, also CAPCOA, we have a lobbyist in the state capitol, and we were working hard to get that program restored. The Moyer program, for instance, is authorized for a certain number of years, and it comes for a reauthorization. I believe it's 2028 or something like that. So it's usually periods of time, and they don't like to reopen it because everybody gets their fingers involved, and then the sausage gets, it tastes different than it currently does. So, but yeah, we've been involved from a local level, and I definitely will let the board know when there's those turning points.
Anything further? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion to adopt the proposed update to the
MBAR. So moved.
We have a first, we have a second.
Second.
Second to Serpa. All those in favor, roll call vote, please.
Okay, Director Sandoval. Director Lopez.
Aye.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Chair Kosmicki.
Yes.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Director De Serpa.
Aye.
Director Eskew. Director Alejo. Approved unanimously.
Great. That would take us to item 16, which is form ad hoc committee to provide direction on community outreach events. Rich Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'll be really quick on this. As we climb out the social distancing hole that was known as COVID-19, I'll just say, who wants to be on an ad hoc committee to talk about how we do outreach to the public? This was on my to-do list in the past, and there's a lot of opportunity for us to engage with the public. The example I used, the board report, was we used to have the Clean Leaders Awards, which was very successful and really well attended, but that didn't happen over COVID. But we recognized community members and businesses for their leadership and technical prowess in the areas of controlling air pollution and climate change. We'd give out awards, and then we'd also host a reception, which was really fun. I think the public enjoyed it. The staff definitely enjoyed it. And we got to feature our board as well, usually as the guest speaker or keynote address. So there are a bunch of different things we can do. We can leverage our funds to work with other communities and get the word out. I will say that when we first started this, the primary intent was just to get the public an idea of who we are. I think we've moved the ball forward a little bit, but if we did a man on the street, most people still don't know what MBARD is, but it's better. And we've done a lot over the past several years to make it, just with our name change alone, I think helped a lot too. So yeah, we're calling for volunteers. This is going to be a temporary assignment once we've concluded, and we've had a basic direction and guidance, then we'll revert back to the board and we'll advise the board of our ideas and directions.
All right, we got one volunteer. Any others? How many do we need? Just up to whatever, under the quorum.
Does
this just a clarify question? Is this to focus on an event, or is it to focus on sort of like general strategies for outreach and visibility, mission aligned visibility?
Yes.
Yes.
So that they, I will just say this one thing is we don't have a public information officer here, which is sort of amazing for the agency this size. That could be on the table too to discuss that as well. I mean, Siri does a lot of amazing outreach, and I try to act as a spokesperson when I can. So, and then we have our managers stepping up to do interviews and so forth, but we could make it more concerted effort. So it could be as simple as let's do a Clean Air Leaders Award, or let's do an annual open house. We've had those in the past. We're open, and we just like to hear ideas, and then we can work something up for the board's ultimate approval.
Okay. And it, you know, maybe having someone from each of the counties would make sense.
So we have Montesino, DeSerba, I'll volunteer for San Benito, the others.
I'm happy to support, and sounds like if we've got someone from Monterey County, was that you volunteering? Yeah.
Okay, so can I repeat? So we have Director Sandoval, Director DeSerba, Chair Kosmicki, and anyone else? And yes? Okay. Are you an alternate, or you're on the committee? You're on the team, I think.
Yeah, I'm four. And do we need to take a vote on that? Yes.
Yes.
Public comment as well. So public comment first, and then we'll take a vote.
No hand raised online. No one here has raised their hand, and nothing received at the office.
Okay, so then we would entertain a motion to approve the ad hoc consisting of Sandoval, Kosmicki, DeSerba, and Askew. Is there a motion?
So moved.
First, we have a second. All those in favor, roll call vote, please.
So fast. Okay. Director Sandoval. Director Lopez.
Aye.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Chair Kosmicki.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Director DeSerba. Director Askew. Director Alejo. Approved unanimously.
Thank you very much. That takes us to item 17, which is our report from APCO.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm going to try to rush through this as fast as possible. There's a lot of information, but first off, I wanted to do something a little bit different, and I'd like to begin the report with recognition and acknowledgement of the diligent work of one of our engineers, Armando Jimenez. Armando worked with the CITOS group over the past 2 years on permitting a pilot project pyrolysis unit located at the Regen Monterey property. The pyrolysis unit was utilized to convert green waste into biochar, which can serve as soil amendment. The project exemplified collaboration among various agencies, including Ambard and Regen, as well as biomass supplier Keith Day and the CITOS group, aimed at enhancing an understanding of pyrolysis as a biomass management tool. Armando carefully reviewed the applicable federal regulations, which we enforce, and was able to communicate the regulatory requirements clearly to the CITOS group. From this effort, Armando issued an authority to construct on behalf of the district, which did require air quality testing, and the testing demonstrated the need for controls, such as a wet scrubber, for future iterations of the pyrolysis unit. Ultimately, Armando developed permit conditions that met US EPA's applicability criteria for the unit not to be subject to UPA's incinerator regulation, which is huge. CITOS group acknowledged the positive outcome of this project, including MBARD's assistance in issuing a permit. So they actually are giving us good press. And I think that's important for the board to know about, that we have people actually singing our praise because we're willing to work with them to get their projects through. So this type of project allows for our staff to learn the nuances of regulations while supporting the development information for new technologies. So thank you, Armando, who is here, and I've got a little gift package for him. Bunch of coffee stuff. He likes coffee. Okay, moving on, I would like to announce our new administrative assistant for engineering.
Eden Gonzalez, who's back in the room, started on July 28th. Eden comes to MBARD with a background in administrative support, data management, professional communication. She's a graduate of CSUMB with a Bachelor of Arts degree in psychology, so it should serve well here. Eden has been a great addition to our team, and we really like working with her. The application period for our new engineering position ended on August 8th. We received over 20 applications. I don't know if you guys are seeing this, but there's a lot more people interested in working at fixed locations these days. Engineering completed the public notice period for Monterey One Water to modify an existing anaerobic digestion system to include co-digestion with food waste. This is a big deal. No comments were received from the public on that project, but this will be the first co-digestion project with a food waste permit issued by MBARD, representing another method for diverting food waste from landfills. Monterey One will benefit from the additional digester gas, which will offset the natural gas used to fuel their cogen system there. And then during the last week of July, the California Air Resources Board enforcement team conducted unannounced joint inspections with MBARD inspectors at three landfills, Johnson Canyon, Monterey Peninsula, and Buena Vista. This provided an opportunity for MBARD inspectors to get training from CARB related to their expectations for monitoring instantaneous methane leaks. CARB and MBARD staff detected methane leaks at all three sites originating from sources such as wellheads and the landfill surface. This is a big source of methane emissions, which is a climate pollutant. And then our standing item, no odor complaints were received from marina residents since the June board meeting. In planning and air monitoring, the air monitoring program will receive technical systems audit from ARB in September. Seems like we're always going through audits. Our equipment is very precise and accurate and needs to be kept up, and we have a lot of people looking over our shoulders. Staff does an amazing job making sure it's up and running, and we usually pass with flying colors during these audits. Planning staff have been working with the Department of Toxic Substances Control and the Army on the planned 287-acre prescribed burn at the former Ford Ord. So this is coming up. The burn window is now open, but it's not expected to take place until late fall. So we've received a grant of $198,000 from DTSC to cover administrative costs for smoke management activities and public response. CARB will be visiting the planning division this week to review the Carl Moyer Memorial Grant Program, make sure our guidelines are up to snuff. They will also tour a past engine replacement project at the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. The EV incentive program is off to a great start, and we've had 93 applications so far since the beginning of July. And so we're about a one quarter the way through our $500,000 that has been allotted for that program. We also have 20 industrial sized air purifiers that we received from a state grant last year to establish clean air centers in preparation for potential smoke impacts from wildfires. We're working with Breathe California to distribute these air purifiers. The County of San Benito, OES, Emergency Services, and Santa Cruz Office of Resource Recovery and Resilience recently received a total of 12 units. And we're working with Monterey. There seems to be some, I'm looking at Monterey folks, there seems to be some slowing down of accepting these potential air purifiers for evacuation centers. The wood stove changeout program, which offers incentives to replace non-certified wood stoves, fireplace inserts, and open hearth fireplaces, is expected to launch in September. Because of the reduction in funds this year, we're targeting only low-income people. But as you saw earlier on the presentation, we can use some of those state funds now and put those towards the wood stove changeout program. That'll probably be reflected in our next year's budget. Outreach, we've been out in the community recently at Toro High School in Salinas. The event was an opportunity to showcase landscape equipment exchange program and the community air protection program. We received an enthusiastic response from the community there. Planning staff will attend an electric vehicle ride and drive event organized by Ecology Action in Watsonville High School on October 4th to promote electric vehicle incentive program.
And there will be at the Good Fire Fair at the Henry Cowell Redwoods on October 11th to educate the committee on effective wood smoke management strategies for open burning. Last couple of items, and you'll be happy to hear. First, I'd like to thank AMBAG. We recently had a replacement water heater installed. It's a heat pump water heater, so no emissions. And this was working through AMBAG with Omri. This was an opportunity for us to change our gas-fired wood heater out, or gas-fired hot water heater out with the new heat pump water heater for zero cost. So this is really great. I want to recognize David for coordinating the installation. Heat pump water heaters offer significant installation and energy savings and environmental benefits, but typically come up with a higher upfront costs as a potential limitation. So being free, that's not one of them. And so we see nothing but really great things. So we will be saving money. It's not a huge amount, but it's better than nothing. And then we're also going to be not contributing emissions to the atmosphere. Lastly, this is congratulations to the governing board on the behalf of the state district's resource management authority. They do our insurance. We're receiving a president's award for not filing any workers' comp claims from the years 2020 to 25. And that's huge. That gives us the distinction of getting an award that we can hang in a wall somewhere, but also it lowers our rates. So there's incentive points that we receive, as well as they reconfigure our liabilities based on the fact that we really haven't had any safety issues. So on behalf of the SDRMA, they wanted me to congratulate you guys on overseeing an effective safety program here at the district. And this is a big change. In the past, we've had a lot of comp issues, and this is not just people working at desks. We have people out in the field climbing ladders, jumping in and out of trucks, driving all over the place. And so we have a very active and engaged community here around safety. It couldn't happen without buy-in from the staff. So we'll be doing our annual danger awareness, violence awareness training tomorrow here as well. We do a lot of these trainings every month to make sure staff are up to date on the latest in safety procedures and precautions. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments? Hearing none, do we have public comment?
No hands raised online, no one here in the boardroom, and nothing received at the office.
Just to say congratulations on the workman's comp. Good job.
If you want to view this certificate, it's right here. It's real.
All right, that would conclude the regular portion of our meeting. We'd be heading into closed session. Do you have any public comment, closed session?
No hands raised online, no one here, and we did not receive anything at the office.
All right, we're adjourned from regular.
And Chair, really quickly, I'll just add for Directors Lopez and Labar, if you want to move over to the other closed session link, we'll meet you there.
Great.
There will be no reportable items from closed session, and we will adjourn from closed session.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.